to all you people back in the Shire. Turn your porch lights off because we're coming home with a trophy.
Hi there, welcome to Sharkcast Pod, a podcast dedicated to the greatest sporting club in the history of the world, the mighty Cronulla Sutherland Sharks. This show is brought to you by Dyson Logistics, the Royal Motor Yacht Club in Port Hacking, and Jason Hawes at Cripps and Cripps Real Estate. My name is Sam Shinazzi, I'm an OG from 2015. Thanks for being in touch with us at Sharkcast Pod on the social medias, sharkcastpod at gmail.com via email. And we appreciate everyone who's subscribing to the podcast and leaving us reviews. It's very kind. We are in a lockdown COVID situation, as most of you in New South Wales at least know. And due to that, this week's episode will be different yet again. We're going to have a regular special guest host, Clinton Maynard, on the line shortly talking about the Broncos game as well as all things Cronulla Sharks. And later on, there'll be a letters section as well. And thanks so much for everyone who's been in touch. And we'll preview the Warriors game as well. Due to the COVID situation, hopefully this episode will all add up sonically and storyline-wise. And you can enjoy it as if it's any normal week. Unlike a certain NRL team who we dislike very much, who are in the news for all the wrong reasons this week, we are going to be responsible human beings and not be in the same room for once when we do record this podcast. So, coming up after the break, Clinton will be on the line. Stick with us, this is Sharkcast Pod. Dyson Logistics have been on board with Sharkcast since day one, and because of that and their excellent service, we are proud to be associated with them. Dyson Logistics provides tailored logistical solutions to meet your individual client needs and is set apart by its personalized service. Dyson is a strong worldwide agent network, enabling highly competitive rates. And I should also point out their head honcho is a lifelong season ticket holder of the mighty Cronulla Sutherland Sharks. Find them online, www.dysonlogistics.com, or call them on 02-8339-1844. Dyson Logistics, service delivered. All right, joining me on the line, due to the pandemic that we are currently in, good friend of the show, regular guest host, Sharks Tragic, Sean Johnson sympathizer up to a degree, Mr. Clinton Maynard. How are you, my friend?
Hello, Sam. Up to a degree. Yes, we'll get into that in a moment. So I'm coming from you for the former 2CH studios at Nine Radio.
What a history there.
Yeah, 2CH actually no longer exists on the AM dial, so we've been left with their studio, so I'm coming here from 2CH.
Okay, that sounds cool. Now, on the weekend, our beloved Cronulla Sutherland Sharks lost a game they should have won. They lost 26-18. They're sitting in eighth place, quite luckily, after the performance from the weekend. They are 2 points behind the Dragons and on the same amount of points as Newcastle and the Cowboys, with the Titans, Warriors, and Raiders just behind us as well. So it's quite a log jam. And it was our first loss in 5 games, Clinton.
There's a lot of bad football team, fortunately, in the NRL this year. Mm. And that means that we've got just as much chance of making the finals as probably 6 or 7 other sides. I think if you separate the top two teams in the comp, Penrith and the Storm, and then the next two teams in probably Parramatta and South, there's a big gap, really. And certainly for the spot 6 and 7, you'd think probably Manly and the Roosters will make up the top 6 at the end of the year.
Yeah.
But below that, there's a bunch of teams that are going to be cannon fodder in the finals, unfortunately. But we are right in the mix there.
Yeah, we are. And we've got one of the easiest schedules left in the competition. We're playing the current bottom 8 on 7 occasions, which is the most for any team in the comp, and the bottom 4 on 4 occasions, which is the equal most. Now, we had that on the weekend and we blew it. I want to talk to you about the game specifically for the moment. What were your thoughts? What are your reactions? Tell me what was going through your mind.
I think it was almost predictable. I think we rarely win at Suncorp. I know we have in recent years, but our record there is not great. And despite the fact, if you looked on paper, that Broncos side, other than Payne Haas, you wouldn't feed most of the players, to be honest. They're not... Most of those players are not first grade standard. Katoni Staggs coming into the team, I think, was always going to be a bit of a concern because he's clearly their best back. And I think he had a whale of a game, given he's been out for almost a year. I thought he was absolutely outstanding. He was their danger man, and Haas was fantastic. But beyond that, they've got nothing. And I think, unfortunately, it was just such a typical Sharks performance. In games that we are meant to win, just like we did against the Bulldogs a few weeks back, we don't stand up. I thought we looked a little lethargic. I thought we did look a bit flat from almost the opening whistle. Mm. And I think a few things really stood out at me at the game, or watching on telly, is I think we're really burning Blake Brayley out. I know that he's one of the fittest guys in the team, but he's having to play 80 minutes week after week after week in only his second full year of first grade, which I think is, I almost feel we're doing him a disservice. Yeah. And then I think we saw the results of that on the weekend. There just seemed to be so many occasions when he wasn't there when the ball was about to be played. And he'd always basically get there. Yeah. And there was a forward pass at one point. There's probably a lot more forward passes in the game from both sides, from dummy half. But I think we're really pushing Brayley too hard at the moment.
Yeah, we've got a few letters later on about that, actually. So it's a bit of a theme. I will say this, it was a very quick game.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that was the reason we lost the game. Mm. But I think that at the moment, the structure of our squad, I guess, doesn't allow it. But I reckon that game showed that in this stage of his development, we need another hooker on the bench. And obviously things change next year with Cam McGuinness, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
I just hope we don't burn the kid out by that point, because he unfortunately is not showing a hell of a lot of attacking flair this year. And watching him in the lower grades, you would have to say your assessment is of the two Brayley brothers, that we kept the younger Brayley because he has more attack than the older Brayley. But when we're able to see it, because we're using him as a tackling machine for 80 minutes. So I've got my concerns there, but I think that'll be rectified next year, as long as we don't destroy the kid in the meantime.
What else did you see? Give me some more thoughts.
Well, I thought Ronaldo was sensational.
Yeah.
Given the emotional situation he'd been through, and he's a pretty emotional sort of character, I thought his treatment by the game of rugby league was a disgrace in the lead up to Origin 2. And I'm one for rules and a stickler for rules, and I think the way that Origin rules for eligibility have been run for decades now as a joke. I mean, Greg Inglis, for instance, we know the song. That's in Queensland, right? But to make that decision on game day, I thought was just so harsh. But nevertheless, I think he was able to put that behind him when he took to the field. I thought he was absolutely outstanding. And he's just showing that he's going to be a real shining light for the club into the future. And I think the other really big thing that stood out to me in the game, Sam, and this will come as a bit of a shock, although we've been texting about this in the last couple of days,
come on,
was the performance of Sean Johnson.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure people who've listened to the pod in the last couple of months know that I'm a big Sean Johnson fan, that his departure from the club has left me scratching my head, because I really feel that we need an experienced half. And with the argument that he, you know, perhaps is a little bit more brand Sean Johnson, not always team first, those cultural reasons I still have had trouble accepting. Watching the game on the weekend, I think we saw the reason that Craig Fitzgerald decided to cut the ties with Sean Johnson and begin a new era. And I don't think it's so much about off-field culture. I think it's more about winning culture and starting to set the standards of what winning culture looks like. And not that he's a leader, but with Moylan out, another experienced player in the halves out in that game, we needed Sean Johnson to stand up. And that's not stand up in pulling off the miracle plays. It's a stand up in leadership. And with Wade Graham out, with Woods, not an 80-minute forward, we lack so much leadership in this side at the moment. And Sean Johnson had to provide that leadership. And let's be honest, some fans would go as far as to say that he went missing. I don't think he went missing. I think he put on some good plays, but we needed consistent team management particularly in that second half, when at 18 all, when the game was there to be run. There were some diabolical individual plays from Sean, that the moment where he was he retrieved the ball and was tackled back in goal was just terrible. It's almost a game changer. There was a kick that he put through that went over the dead ball line that created a seven tackle set that I think was a bit of a change in the match as well. But we needed solid leadership in that game. And to me, that, you know, obviously Craig Fitzgibbon sees things in rugby league that fans like us take a long time to cotton onto. Mm-hmm. And I've probably taken a long time to cotton onto it, but I saw the reason why Sean Johnson's not staying at the club today.
For me, I agree, watching that game, the number one thing missing was leadership. And it was from a range of players who could have taken the step up. And it's not on the young guys to do it, but you would say out of all the, well, the 16 guys that got on the field, Ronaldo was probably the leader, and he's a rookie. Now, you said before, and I'm going to quote you, Sean Johnson isn't a leader, but now he is our highest paid player in that team. He's in our most important position. Looking at the list, I guess aside from Woods, he's our most experienced player. Mm. We were in that game on and off throughout, basically until it blew out at the end. But we were in it at various stages.
It was 18-all with about 20 to go, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it was, as you say, against a team that are quite beatable. They were good on their day.
Absolutely. It was the best Broncos performance in months. We could have had their measure the way we were attacking at times. We could have had their measure, I think, with a bit more leadership and game management from Sean Johnson.
Yeah, and it just looked like he was in a very lethargic mood. And, you know, sometimes it's unfair to put everything on one player, because I'm looking at the list. Jesse Ramian had a howler that could have led to a try. And it was a 12-point turnaround. There are other people that you can point the finger at, but we are talking about Sean. He signed a deal last week. You'd think he'd come out and show with the Sharks fans that this is what I'm made of. Mm. He just looked like he was at times playing touch footy, and it wasn't good enough.
It's not to say that I'm happy that he's going, because I like a lot of the way he plays. He's our player of the year last year. I like what he does off the, I know people, you know, sometimes complain about the Sean brand issue, but I think he's a model citizen. I think we need more people like that in rugby league, particularly after what we've seen in the last few couple of days with the Dragons. But when you've got a young team that lacks leaders, you need your highest paid player in the halves to be that leader. Now, my concern going forward, Sam, is that I don't see how we replace him, or I don't see who take, if we need somebody to lead the side in the number seven, I don't see who it is.
And are you talking about this year or next year?
For next year. And I can't wait for Nicho Hynes to join the club, but I'm not convinced he's going to be that man. And if he is that man, it's going to be putting a lot of pressure on a kid who's played 24 games.
Well, I think we need to hold off until Sir Fitz does a bit more magic. I got a feeling that there's a bit more recruitment to come. So.
Oh, look, and I hope that's the case.
Yeah.
Because I felt, and I'm glad they're giving Trindle more of a run. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe Trindle had trouble getting into the game. You talk about the way that Brayley was playing. Well, more often than not, his selection of which playmaker he was going to go towards on the fifth was, what, 9 times out of 10, Sean Johnson. I'm not saying that's wrong, but I think it was difficult for Trindle to show his wares in that game.
I thought he was solid. Like he didn't do too much wrong.
No, I'm not downplaying the game he had. I just found that he didn't, and I'm not saying he didn't step up, because it shouldn't be the role of a 22-year-old to step up, to be honest.
No.
But the thought of having a Trindle-Hynes halves combination next year doesn't fill me with confidence, even though having Hynes, we see he plays so well week in, week out. That does fill me with confidence he's going to be great for the team if he's alongside somebody who's going to run the team.
Now, we hinted at it for months and months and months, and finally it came true. Connor Tracy started the game at centre, left centre. He had a mixed game, one that I thought left me with more hope than heartache. That is disputed by other fans and supporters, which is totally fine. He ran for 126 metres, had 5 tackle busts, 1 line break. In attack, I thought he was very effective, particularly with his speed. In defence, more often than not, he was found out on the weekend, but I saw enough there to give me a little bit of hope that should he play there again, he might improve in defence. Mm. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, I thought he was, of the two centres, I thought he was better than Ramien. I think Ramien's involvement was actually higher than it has been in recent months.
Yeah.
But he had that howler, and he's got mistakes in him, clearly. I'm starting to wonder whether Ramien, actually, we should start to think about moving him towards the back row. I know that's a big call, but I just wonder whether the long term, whether he's an answer for us in centre. Mm. I'm not convinced Connor Tracy's a centre either, but I just love the energy he brings to the team.
Yeah.
And he had plenty of that playing in that jersey this week. And that, I think, overall is what the team lacked. Mm. And look, I love the way this guy has played for us in the last 18 months. And I love the way he's bounced back from injury this year. But I think his performance was a little representative of the team's probably flat, lethargic nature last weekend. And that was Talakai. And yeah. I thought Talakai, I won't say Talakai played badly, but he didn't bring that oomph and enthusiasm that he usually does off the bench. Now, Connor Tracy is bringing that enthusiasm, and that's the sort of game that I've been expecting from Talakai. I think that it almost was representative of the whole team.
We saw Teague start the game. He played the full 80 minutes, and he ran for 130 metres, three tackle busts, a bunch of tackles. There were some errors in his game, but I thought overall, despite criticism online about him, I thought Teague did all right. Now, Talakai came off the bench, played for half an hour. He had 10 runs for 88 metres. No tackle busts, 14 tackles, 2 misses. It was a very un-Talakai-like game, and I wonder if he is more effective being an 80-minute player. I know it doesn't make sense because you think you will him off the bench and wind him up and go, but we've seen him start and be a bit more effective than be off the bench.
Yeah, quite possibly. And I think because Talakai wasn't providing that impact that he usually does, I think the fact that our two starting props in Tolman and Woods they're not lethargic players. That don't provide you with oomph, so to speak. And you expect that when Williams has been outstanding this year, and I thought he was pretty good again on the weekend. When a Williams and a Talakai comes on, they do that. Hamuelli seemed to be in the Tolman and Woods class on the weekend.
It didn't get much time, but also didn't do much with that time that he got.
He's been out injured. I think, just on reflection, I think we probably should excuse them to a point that, and people probably don't realise this, but the players at the moment actually aren't probably having an easy time living in their COVID bubble either.
Yeah, yeah.
And then having to travel Brisbane, I'm assuming they probably charter flight into Brisbane. They probably were tested upon arrival. They would have been very much out of routine. And maybe all those things probably add up to a point in affecting their energy levels, maybe.
Maybe. My only point on that, Clinton, would be last year it seemed to work for them, the fly-in, fly-out.
Yeah, that's true.
It might be dependent on the day. I'm not sure. I do want to talk about Woods and Tolman, and I'm trying not to be too negative about this performance, but watching the game, and it's been documented elsewhere, that we were making sort of 40, 50-meter sets. They were making 70 to 80-meter sets. And not that I couldn't work out why, but I had a look at our team list while watching the game. And I thought, well, hang on, our starting props are Aiden Tolman and Aaron Woods. Aiden Tolman is a workaholic, but he's not a meter eater. He's a smaller prop. Aaron Woods is an older prop who's been in okay form lately, but still he's not in your top 10 props in the game. I'm looking at our two starting props and just thinking it's not good enough.
I've been almost of the view that if Woods was willing to accept a fairly small contract, I'd be quite happy for Fitz to do a backflip on his position. Mm-hmm. But and from the word floating around the traps is Manly's keen on him and the Broncos are keen on him. So it might be an option anyway. But I've got to say, after watching in the weekend, I don't think you could keep Woods and Tolman in the one squad.
No.
And I'd be more inclined to keep Tolman at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with that. We can't say they didn't try, though.
No.
They were decent. I'll say this. The attack, if they controlled the attack a bit more, and it probably comes back to the spine. But they played some wonderful attacking football. We saw some great tries. We saw some blown tries. They blew 3 tries from memory, which would have got them across the line for the win. So they weren't far away. It's more the fact they lost the game they should have won. They lost to the Broncos, who are coming 15th and terrible. We did play some really good attacking football. It was just a little bit too Hail Mary for me, Clinton. I need just a little bit more structure and then throw it around.
And maybe that comes down to what we're talking about with Sean Johnson. That's sort of the way he rolls in the miracle play sometimes. We saw him was close to the line. He almost made one of those breaks of Sean Johnson of old. Yeah. I think we then, it's probably one of the first times since he's been back from the Achilles we've seen a break like that. But also that did display to us, I think, that he's not going to have the same impact in that environment now because of the injury. So for Sean Johnson's own good going forward, he needs to develop stronger game management skills and leadership skills because he's not going to be able to rely on that pace off the mark that he once did.
Yeah.
But look, that's not going to be our concern. And you know, I must admit, when the Warriors news came through, and I know you spoke to Jards about this last weekend, I was stunned by it because all the talk was that he'd been offered up by his management to the Warriors and had been rejected months ago. I've got to say, Sim, I was actually really happy to hear it.
Yeah,
You know, I was just felt that while I wasn't happy with, particularly by that point because we hadn't played the Broncos, I wasn't happy with Sean Johnson leaving the club. Knowing that he was going back to his home just made me think, yeah, that's fine. That'll now make sense. Not that we've pushed him that way, but I'm quite happy to see him go back to the Warriors. But just concerned about who's going to be lining up in the number seven next year.
I know you are. I do have to clarify, you and I mean, it's clear that you are. I also am a big Sean Johnson fan. I've liked him since he debuted. I enjoy watching him play. When he came to the Sharks, I was over the moon. I'd love to see him finish out the year strongly. But examples like that on the weekend, as you've said quite succinctly, is that moving forward, we probably need just, someone who can control the game a bit better. And if it was a young Sean Johnson that we had, different story. You would let him run around and do the crazy things he used to do, but he's not young anymore, as we pointed out. He's coming off a really bad injury. What did you make of the fact that Matty Moylan didn't play? How did that impact us?
He's had a good year by his standards, or by his standards with us over the past 2 years. He's been having a good year. It was your tweet that first alerted me to the fact that he was out because I wasn't watching pregame. And it just, to me, it seems so typical Sean Johnson to be ruled out on game day. It wasn't until I understood that it had been an injury that he'd been dealing with all week and they actually were just desperately trying to get him on the field and flew into Brisbane. I actually accepted, well, look, injuries will happen, even to somebody as injury prone as him. I think we can actually excuse that situation.
Should we be doing that? Should we be forcing him to fly and then do the warm-ups and then have him
I'd put my confidence in the medical staff that they know what they're doing. Surely they wouldn't be doing something that's going to put his longer term future in jeopardy. The fact that he's not playing this weekend, though, and obviously you'll talk about teamless later on, but that he's not been named in the site at all is an indication that it is more serious than just a simple twinge on the day. I think what I was happy about, I thought Will Kennedy had a pretty good game.
He did,
So it was good to see him have a good game without Moisa.
Yes.
But Matt Moylan doesn't provide, I don't think he provides the leadership that I'm talking about that we lack. It does seem to be that a little bit more talk around that he's actually the one, though, in the team who maybe runs most of the plays, that it's Shaw more the off-the-cuff player and Moylan sort of directing things a little more. Maybe it's just vocally. Mm. But what he does manage to do, he seems to straighten up the attack.
He does, yeah.
And I think we lacked that.
We did. We did.
We definitely missed that, yeah.
I thought Sione Katoa was exceptionally good as well. I should let that out.
Some of the takes under the high ball, under the pressure from him were great. And you've got a lot more confidence watching Katoa on the wing. As wonderful as Connor Tracy is for the team, I do feel more confident with Katoa on the side.
What did you make of the no try early on?
Look, it was laughable because we all know the bunker can't rule on forward passes. Mm. It was a complete smother. But I'm quite happy to accept it.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, it was such a blatant forward pass. I'm quite willing to cop it. I would have felt bad had the try been awarded. Well, not bad, but, you know. So, yeah, of course, it's one of the greatest smothers ever in bunker history.
Yeah.
But fine.
Clinton, because we're doing a COVID episode, COVID-affected episode, we're going to jump around a little bit. Now, you are the COVID expert between the two of us, which isn't that hard. It's part of your day job. Let's talk about, and I don't want to have an essay on it really, but let's talk about the Drags and what happened there. And more specifically, Do you think that other clubs, i.e. our club, for example, everyone's learnt from this, right? Like the players will learn from this, surely. Mm.
Well, they should, because we're recording this on Tuesday evening, and I've been reporting on this throughout the afternoon. So this is the day that a few hours ago Paul Vaughan was sacked.
Yep.
Paul Vaughan apparently is on $800,000 a year.
Wow.
He's paid a big price. The $50,000 fine from the NRL is as big a fine as they can issue. The 8-game suspension, he will have trouble finding another club because of that 8-game suspension. I think he will find another club for next season, mind you, but it'll be a cut price deal.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
I've heard so many, we've had a lot of talk back on our station this week about the wrongs and the rights of it. Some people saying, well, they were just having a barbecue. Mm. The problem I've got with that argument is the rest of us, as in general society, people who aren't paid $800,000 a year, most of us are trying to do the right thing. Whether we agree with the restrictions or not, most of us are trying to be law-abiding and do the right thing.
Well, you and I can't podcast in the same room.
Correct.
That's heartbreaking enough for me.
And I think I find it offensive that blokes who are paid that sort of money would jeopardise the rules, would effectively insult all their supporters who are playing by the rules. So that's from the health audits issue. But probably the bigger issue that maybe the players don't understand, but if by some chance somebody at that barbecue did have COVID, like has been the case, there was an apartment at Waterloo where a party was held a week ago. It's turned out 7 people out of 10 or 11 at that party have been infected with COVID, okay? So just say somebody at the Paul Vaughan barbecue had COVID and it wiped out 13 Dragons players. Now, even if they didn't have COVID, they would have to isolate from the rest of the Dragons club. If the Dragons club is then in a position it cannot play football, it puts the game at risk. And that sounds like an overreaction, but it puts broadcasting deals at risk.
As someone who was stood down from work who works in the footy business last year, I mean, I'm very offended by it, and it's completely put the game in jeopardy. There's no doubt about that.
What really cheeses me off is the fact that these are blokes who are paid literally hundreds of thousands of dollars a year.
Yeah.
They have been given so much information about what is right and wrong. And I'm not saying it's easy to have to live in this NRL bubble, which is much stricter than what we do in everyday life.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's easy, but if they want to be privileged in being paid $800,000 a year, and okay, that's the most extreme example, they've got to cop it. But then the fact that they tried, and this is not disputed, the fact they tried to cover it up. Paul Vaughan conducted a Zoom meeting with the other players so they could all concoct their stories.
Is that
Jack
right?
DeBellin, and it's, you know, people think it's laughable. Jack DeBellin was hiding under a bed when the cops came knocking.
It's laughable.
There were other players who were hiding in cupboards, because they knew what they were doing was the wrong thing.
And whether it's fans or just fans of the game or whatever who will be on their side saying, oh, it's just a barbecue, it's just a get-together, boys unwinding. The fact that they had a grown man hiding under a bed from police officers.
They knew it was wrong.
They knew completely it was wrong.
And it does demonstrate that many of these players have just got no sense of reality.
Yeah.
Jack Bird, I would think, and I'm not making a judgment on the legal aspect of what he has been through in the last couple of years. Not Jack Bird, Jack DeBellin.
Yes.
Jack Bird was fined. But Jack DeBellin, I would have thought if I was in his position, I would be thanking my lucky stars that my career is still alive at the moment. And I would not want to put my career in any form of jeopardy. Now, he realised his career was in jeopardy because he hid under the bed. But why did he put himself in that position in the first place?
I don't have the words, to be honest, Clinton, but I just hope that the entire NRL can learn from this, and I hope there's not one more incident, really.
Maybe we're just exposed to the real world a little bit more than football players.
Sure.
So we understand the implications of these things. When we were discussing doing this podcast today, our immediate reaction was probably we'd record it in the normal way that we do.
Mm.
And then it dawned on me, hang on, under the restrictions we currently have in Sydney, that's actually not technically allowed. And you think, oh, look, you probably, no one's going to care if we sit together for an hour or so and have a chat about the Sharks.
Yeah.
But that technically would be in breach of the rules. Now, in my day job, I talk about COVID probably more than any, unfortunately, as a reporter and as a presenter on the radio, I probably talk about COVID more than anything else. How hypocritical would it look if I was caught out breaking the rule, whether it was dangerous or not. So immediately I said to you, look, we're going to have to do it via FaceTime or whatever.
Yeah.
And the football players, I can't believe they don't think in the same way about the risk they're creating for themselves and the game as a whole.
It's just remarkable. And the story about Corey Norman's wallet being left on the barbecue is probably now my favourite rugby league atrocity story. That one I can't get my head around.
Oh, but I still like the Julian O'Neill and Schlossy's shoes.
Oh, I've got a top 10 for you. Don't worry about that. But this one has really risen the ranks, I can tell you.
The one thing I'm grateful for, Sam, is it's not the Sharks.
Yeah, I know.
I'm very grateful for that.
It's just funny that it's St. George as well. The situation is not funny, but it's funny that it's them. Yeah. Clinton, I want to talk about something brighter and something with a lot more love involved. And that is our colleague, Jardine Ormsby, came up with the idea to do a fantasy draft for the Cronulla Sharks, which you can hear as a separate episode last week that Jardine and I did. We came up with two teams, and I'm very happy with both teams. And from that, we had a really great response, and people started doing their own teams. And I want to give a shout out to our friend Michael and to our friend H-Man, Team Leo and Team Michael. They did their own draft, essentially, I think via Twitter or via the phone. I'm not sure. But if you want to hear Jardian and my teams, you can go listen to the podcast. But I just want to run through the Pepsi Sharks, which is Leo, Team Leo. He's got Ben Barber, Brett Howland, Andrew Ettinghausen, Steve Rogers, and Matt Rogers. His halves are James Maloney and Preston Campbell. His front row is Andrew Fifita, Michael Ennis, and Dane Sorensen. Pretty handy back row of Luke Lewis, Gavin Miller, and Captain Paul Gallen. His bench is Greg Bird, Jason Stevens, Matt Pryor, and Danny Nutley. Now, going against him is our good friend Michael. He's gone with Captain David Peachy at fullback, Valentine Holmes, and Richie Barnett on the wings. I like that. Not controversial, but a bit surprising. I think it's one of his favourite players. Jeff Bell is in the centres with Mark McGaw. Mitch Healy and Paul Green are the halves. Front row of Martin Lang, Aaron Raper, Danny Lee. Back row of Wade Graham, the legendary Nathan Long, and Tuira Nicow. Handy bench of Adam Dykes, Les Davidson, Adam Ritson, and the great South African Tian Strauss. Who I actually looked up when I was doing our fantasy the other week with Jardine, and he only played a handful of games for us.
Yeah.
Now, just while I'm on it, I want to give a shout out to Liam, who's a loyal listener. Liam sent in his team, and he stated that he's, I think I'm okay to say this, that he's 51 years old. Liam's team is Peachy, Matt Rogers, ET, Steve Rogers, Valentine Holmes, Maloney, and Preston in the halves. Front row of Sorensen, McMartin, and Stevens. Back row of Wade Graham, Gavin Miller, Paul Gallen. Bench, Greg Pearce, Luke Lewis, Marty Lang, and Dan Staines. But even more impressive, Clinton, is his dad. His dad is 78 years old. I'm not sure what his name is. But he's got Peachy, Matt Rogers, E.T. McGaw, Valentine Holmes, 5/8 of Steve Rogers, and Tommy Bishop at halves, in the halves. He's got Dane Sorensen, my favourite, Isaac de Goyce at hooker, Cliffy Watson, Ken Madison, Miller, and Greg Pearce as the back row, with a bench of Gallen, Kamali, Dykes, and Graham, who I'm assuming is Wade. I love this stuff, yeah. I've got to tell you. We've had a lot of different responses come in, and we'll get to them all. What are your thoughts on the fantasy situation, Clinton, and what are you thinking? Do you want to do one, or what are your thoughts?
It just was a fantastic episode to listen to. And I think it really works. You've got to play off against someone else.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you've got access to every player in the history, yes, of the Cronulla Sharks to, yes, name. I think it's really tricky to name players before your time.
It is.
And obviously, most people will have a Steve Rogers somewhere in the side. But a lot of fans haven't seen Steve Rogers play. I mean, I go back to the 80s, but
yeah,
I still only recall Steve Rogers in making that final appearance of the Sharks where his jaw was broken.
Right.
So I really didn't have much exposure to a Steve Rogers. So I think that's tricky. But it's listening to it, I kept thinking, gosh, why haven't you named this so-and-so yet? What? And, I mean, there were a couple of ones that seemed to take a long time to be named that stood out for me in your size. And Mark McGaugh, I thought, took a long time to be named.
Yeah.
And you know, you were asking about, you asked Judge, or maybe Judge asked you about your favourite Andrew Ettingshausen memory.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just little moments in games. And the thing that struck me about that question was my favourite Andrew Ettingshausen memory. And it's actually a memory combined with Mark McGaugh.
Yeah.
And it's, I can't even remember what game it was, but I just remember as a little kid being at Shark Park.
Yeah.
And whoever we were playing, their winger was sprinting down the touchline looking like they were going to score a runaway try.
Right.
And in defence, Ettingshausen and McGaugh sprinted after them and combined to barrel them over the touchline.
Mm.
And to me, it was just like, wow, greatest centre combination in Cronulla history.
Mm. Oh, they were very good. And it was the days when you played next to each other. So they really, like
they
McGaugh.
They complemented each other so
McGaugh
well.
McGaugh was really underrated in a way because ET was the genuine star, the superstar. But Sparkles really set him up for probably half the tries.
Absolutely.
You know?
Let's remember that he had heroics for New South Wales and Australia, McGaugh, well. He was an absolute super player. And that's where it's so hard. If you're just going to name your best 17 of all time, it's so hard because how do you have ET, McGaugh and Steve Rogers in one side? Now, Liam's got Steve Rogers there at 5'8", which is a bit of an inspired decision. But I find it really hard because I didn't see much of Steve Rogers play. The other one that I thought was taking a bit of time to be named, and I know he's a very controversial character in Sharks history, but I'm glad that Jard's got him in there.
Yeah,
is Noddy.
Yeah,
Brett Camoli.
Sure.
And I think he's a victim of the Chris Anderson era.
Yeah.
But if you look at sheer statistics, Noddy was the team for so many years.
Oh yeah, yeah. You have to lay out the rules when you play, Clinton. It's are we going for the very best? Are we going for favourites? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, is this who you want your ultimate team to be? How do you want them to perform? All heart? Do you want stats? It's just, that's what's so great about fantasy sport, basically.
Yeah. I know Jarge is making the point that he was picking plenty of people out of 2016.
Yeah.
But as he was naming those players out of 16, it just hit, and this is, I was listening to it, I was listening to part of it before the Broncos game and the second part after the Broncos game. And it just dawned on me, and well, it still did dawn on me, we know it for a fact, but that 2016 team was packed with leadership.
Yes.
Experienced leaders. And the fact that we had, I don't think we should ever underestimate the impact that Michael Innes had on that team.
Yeah.
In bringing leadership and a tough culture to the team. Paul Gallen was the leader for years and years and years. It's players like that, even a Brett Camoli. Mm. But imagine if we had Brett Camoli playing outside on Sunday afternoon against the Broncos.
Oh, yeah.
What I'm talking about is just that level-headed kicking game to the corners with a really good chase.
I mean, I wanted to point out that Sean actually was doing that for a while, particularly in the first half. He had a few, like three or four repeat sets.
It just needed to be in the second half, didn't it?
Well, he just stopped. I couldn't work out why.
Yeah. I was so happy to see you include Dane Sorensen.
Yep.
He was one of my favourite players of the 80s because my mum's a Kiwi. Okay. And I don't know whether the connection is, but mum used to tell me that growing up, her family was friends with the Sorensen family. So I've never met Dane Sorensen, maybe I did once, but it was great to see that somebody who was before the time of a lot of Sharks fans was in your side. And he was a great player and Kurt was a great player.
They were fantastic. So we had a lot of fun with that. We're definitely going to do another one at the end of the year. We'll have sort of four or five of us get together. And
well, if I can mention two players that have missed out. I can't see anyone who's mentioned them.
Please.
Danny Lee.
Well, Danny was in... Hang on one sec.
Was he in one of your bench? Was he...
No, he was in someone who just... Who did I just read out? Danny is in Team Michael.
Okay. Danny Lee, I just think was... I think he meant so much to us through the John Lang era that bloke who just got on with doing the job. And my favourite from the 80s didn't make the cut, Dean Carney.
Well, if Dr. Cameron Webb gets involved, and I've got to tell you, Dr. Cameron Webb is an absolute fantasy obsessive. He's going to pick. So I'd like to have you and Cam in the one
Yeah, let's
league,
do it.
And then you can fight it out for Dean Carney. You'll be like me going for Valentine after like two goes. You'll be like, Dean Carney. Yeah, you take Dean Carney and I'll take Paul Gallen.
would any of the current crop come into consideration?
Let's have a look at the current crop. Let me look at the team.
It's a big ask.
It's a big ask.
Well, look, Fifita's still part of the squad, and obviously he made
Andy
Guardian side.
Yeah, no one else though. To be fair, like, and most of these guys have played like 30 games, so it's not being unfair. But
yeah,
no, the answer is no. Aside from Andrew Fifita.
Well, hopefully Craig Fitzgibbon will be the next coach that we consider in a fantasy side in a few years' time. Hey.
Yes. Now, Clinton, before we go, is there anything else that you and I are going to address before I let you go?
Well, usually we are doing this podcast after we've either made a big signing or or there's been a big departure or there's been some sort of major contracting issue. Mm-hmm. So this is probably the first time we've done a pod without that news being dropped on us today. But we are recording this probably a day earlier than we usually record.
Mm.
So given this is a Tuesday evening, that might mean Wednesday is the day that we get it. Look, I just on signing news, I know it's gone a bit quiet in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Perhaps that's because Craig Fitzgibbon is in Origin camp at the moment as the assistant coach to the Blues. He also made the point, he did an interview on one of our programs here at 2GB last week, and it was great to hear. He didn't speak extensively about the Sharks, but he touched on the Sharks. And he said one of the reasons he wanted to come to the club, and I know he said this a few times, is that he admires our junior talent.
Yeah.
And it sounds like he doesn't want to make a huge amount of change, certainly at the junior level anyway. I listened to a really interesting interview, I must say, on an opposition station a few weeks ago.
Mm.
And I forgive me, I can't remember the fella's name.
Mm.
But I think his nickname was the NRL Economist.
Yes, yeah.
And it was an amazing bunch of statistics that he's put together about the success of clubs and player turnover and recruitment. And after listening to his analysis, and effectively his analysis was the fewer players you recruit over time, the better you actually go.
Yes.
It actually filled me with confidence about the Fitz era. And the Storm and the Roosters probably headline that, and the Panthers for that matter, of clubs that are bringing in players at a junior level and then sticking with them longer term.
Yeah.
And the Panthers are blessed, obviously, to have that nursery, so it's got a production line. And that filled me with a fair bit of confidence that, you know, I think as fans, we hang out for the signing.
Yeah.
And maybe the Fitz, when he's publicly saying that he's coming to us because of the junior talent, maybe that should give us a bit of confidence that he's going to follow that philosophy of trying to not have a huge amount of turnover in the list from year to year and developing what we've got. I still think we need a little bit more experience in the team in leadership, but I think in longer term, I think Fitz is going to develop the right sort of culture that'll be along the lines of a Storm or a Roosters that'll hold us in good stead. But I suspect that with Fitz in Origin camp at the moment, that may be a reason we're not hearing about any signing announcements whatsoever. And perhaps when Origin is over next Wednesday night, maybe there'll be something. Let's remember the most in-demand player now left in the game on the player market is Dale Finucane.
Right.
I read an article this morning that he's been linked to 7 clubs, and our name was in the list of clubs that he's been linked to. Okay. His manager says there is 99% chance that he will be leaving the Storm.
Really?
Yeah, which is a bit of a change in tune to what has been said in the last couple of weeks. The thought was that he would actually take unders to stay at the Storm. Well, according to his manager, Blackburn of Andrew Purcell, who may have been a former Sharks player, actually, lower grade Sharks player, I think, he says 99% chance leaving the Storm.
Okay.
Knowing that Cronulla have been doing things when it comes to recruitment with Cam McGuinness and Nicho Hynes very much on the quiet, let's hope maybe we're going to get a nice surprise in the last few weeks, because I think for our forward pack, he's exactly the sort of player we need at the moment in terms of an older leadership style player.
Love the way he plays. I do. I've said before, I think that even though I've been told he's a smaller size prop or middle, I think he's more than capable to do that job. Great leadership on and off the field. I would definitely be interested in his services. I would definitely be interested in paying him good money, probably not amazing money, but definitely good money. I wouldn't be insulting him with an offer that's not up to, you know, what he deserves. I don't think we should probably get into the West Tigers category where they're going to just throw everything at him. But I would love to see Dale Finucane at the club. I've said that before. I'll say it again. I would love to see him here. And if it can't be him, then I would love to see a JWH. I would love to see just someone with that toughness that we're going to need next year.
Yeah.
I will also say, Clinton, on the coaching matter, I tweeted after the game that I thought we were out-coached on the weekend, which I believe. And I think that if we had Craig Fitzgibbon coaching that game, that we win the game. I think that he would have the right systems in place. He would have had them in the right mood. He would have had them aware that we're walking into an ambush. And I'm not blaming Josh Hannay for the loss, but I was surprised with A, the game plan, and B, some of the selections, particularly the bench situation, which I know was a bit last minute because of the Moylan thing, but if they knew he was injured all week, I just think that he had a fourth player in Harati who didn't get on the field. I was a bit disappointed in I'll say in the coaching on the weekend.
I think what was so fantastic about the State of Origin series is the fact that the Queenslanders have scored one try so far, and Craig Fitzgibbon is very much the defensive coach of the side. And you know, we all know football games are won on defence, and that's how we won our premiership in the first place. And we need to get back to that. We haven't had that for the last couple of years, and it fills me with confidence that Fitz is going to bring that to us. The Craig Bellamy talk has virtually disappeared in recent months.
Yeah.
And I know it does seem a little strange that he hasn't even recommitted to the Storm yet, because it would leave it very late in the piece for the Storm to have to find a new coach. I know Jason Riles, the talk is he's actually signed on to be an assistant at the Roosters replacing Fitz, and Riles has been seen as the heir apparent down in Melbourne. So maybe we're not getting Craig Bellamy. Oh, I know this sounds bizarre. I don't think we need Craig Bellamy. Of course, I'd welcome him with open arms, because he'd be wonderful to set culture and attract players. But I've now got so much confidence in Craig Fitzgibbon, I actually don't think we need anyone above him.
I don't know how to answer that, because I know what you're saying and I don't disagree, but I would literally do anything to have him at the club. So I'll disagree in that sense. I kind of think we do need him. It doesn't all come back to Craig Fitzgibbon. I think Craig should really just be allowed to concentrate on the footy things and everything else. I think that Craig Bellamy would do beyond well, but we'll see. It's a long shot. We're still not out of the running, but as you say, maybe it won't be happening with Riles going elsewhere as well. So
yes. I'll leave you with one final thought, Sam.
Please.
In terms of player recruitment, and again, I have no information that this is. I know it was rumored a couple of months ago. No information this is even on the cards. What's the chances of Mitchell Pearce ending up being a Shark next season?
I'd put them at probably 30% right now, just because of the past relationship with Fitzgibbon, as well as the fact that we hear certain things out of the club up in Newcastle, and how he's not the complete senior leader they want. So, and the more I think about it, the more I wouldn't be opposed to it, even though I'm historically just not a fan of him as a footballer. So we'll see though. We'll see.
I wouldn't mind it. I've not been a massive fan of Mitchell Pearce either, but and the off-field issues are, I guess, a concern. But I think that the Knights looked so much better on the weekend.
Yeah.
And the last 2 weeks with Mitchell Pearce back in the side. Yeah, they had Kalen Ponga as well last week.
I think if he played a Chad-like, dare I say, Jeff Robson role where he just steered him around and Nico went berserk, I think there'd be no problem with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we go, I'll just bring you some breaking news, Sam.
Please.
I know we've got to move on.
Please.
But this is as of 2 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And we should, just in the interest of fairness, bring this to you. Paul Vaughan has just released a statement. This is Tuesday night.
Oh, boy.
He says, "My actions were stupid, unexplainable, and irresponsible. The events took place on the weekend were thoughtless, disrespectful, not to only the game that I love, but all the sponsors, members, and fans, as well as the broader community. The reality is I should have known better. I'm truly sorry. I've let a lot of people down through my actions. I hope this sincere apology shows how deeply sorry I am, that I realise the enormity and the stupidity of what I've done. To say I've learned a lesson from this is an understatement. I hope one day in the future I can get the opportunity to showcase my remorse through better actions on and off the field. Again, I apologise to my teammates, the NRL, the club, its members, sponsors, fans, and all along the stakeholders in the game and community."
Can I just point out that Vaughny Vaughan did not write that? He okayed it, is what I'm going to say.
I think but you're right.
You know what? Good on him for doing that. Last question for you, Clinton, before my son takes over this podcast. Would you take Paul Vaughan next year?
No.
All right.
I don't think he's that good, to be honest.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think decent props are dime a dozen. I think you can find a decent prop for a lot less than $800,000 a year.
Oh, we're not giving him that. All right, Clinton, thank you for your time. We'll get you back on the show when we can, I was going to say meet face to face, but maybe that won't be for a while, so we'll see.
Yep.
But appreciate your time and your thoughts. I'm glad you're sleeping better at night now the Sean Johnson saga is over.
Hopefully we can actually get to a game at some point soon too. That'd be nice.
That would be nice. And we will talk to you shortly, Clinton. Until then, up, my brother.
Thank you, Sam.
The Royal Motor Yacht Club Port Hacking is a hidden gem of the Shire, situated on the banks of the beautiful Port Hacking. It's a great place to catch up with friends, celebrate your birthday or any special occasion, and they always show the NRL live on the big screens. They also have live acoustic music on weekends. Yachty's Bistro is open 7 days and nights for lunch and dinner, and they also do a phenomenal breakfast on weekends. If you mention Sharkcast, you get a free garlic bread, baby. The RMYC Port Hacking, proud sponsors of this podcast and big supporters of the Cronulla Sutherland Sharks. Check out their website, rmycph.com.au. They've got a Facebook page, or you could go old school and call them on 02-9523-9300.
Three out from half time. They need to score if there are any chance of man lost it. And here's a try. If he can link up with Peachy, they're away. They won't catch David Peachy, will they? They will. Where's Preston? He's run away from him. Preston's on their inside. Now he's on their outside. They still won't get Peachy. He's going for the corner. Here comes the cover. They don't try. They couldn't get him. I don't believe it. What a try, David Peachy.
Welcome back to Sharkcast Pod. This is the letters section. Thanks again to Clinton Maynard for giving us his time before, and it's always great to talk Sharks with you, my friend. Thank you also to everyone who's been in touch. Another busy week for the letter room. And first up, we have Brett from Adelaide. And all he's got to say is, Broncos game, enough said. Brett, thanks for being in touch. Hope you're keeping well in Adelaide. Michael says, we went to Brisbane expecting to win and we got beat. There is no leadership on the pitch without Wade Graham. There's not a leader in the spine. There's barely a leader on the park. As much as people like me begged for Chad Townsend to run away Simba and never return, he at least gave a you-know-what about the club. Sean Johnson's performance, bar a few of his own runs, was a non-effort farce. He wouldn't take a hard pinch for the club moving forward. He slapped the ball to nobody, turned it back inside for plodding Woods late in the game when we were chasing points. He put a kick dead with no pressure on him that had me raging. The attack in good ball was gross. He's the dominant play caller and we dish that up. The shape, what shape? He showed up like he didn't want to be there. His body language was awful. I would not lose sleep if he never played for Cronulla again. Michael never misses with both praise and criticism for his beloved Cronulla Sharks. And I've got to say, he's pretty much on the money there. I agree with most of that, Michael, and it is interesting the comparison between the efforts of a Chad Townsend and the efforts of a Sean Johnson. Even when Chad played for the Warriors last week, I know it wasn't a great game for him, but you could see the effort was there. And sometimes we need to see that, even if one isn't performing to their best, you still want to see a bit more effort. So it will be interesting to see what happens with Sean moving forward. He says, we obviously can't rely on Matt Moylan as he's always injured, but my God, he is more important to the team than what we thought. We looked directionless out there when the game was there to be taken from the Broncos in the first half. Kennedy managed to get himself in the game without Matt Moylan, which was a positive, but seriously, we looked completely shapeless without Matt Moylan. Trindall was obviously a late call-up, or maybe he wasn't. Either way, he was green. But this is more on the senior players. We bombed two tries. We blew a huge opportunity when Sean finally did something because we have no breakaway speed at the club, and Jesse Ramian, tough man that he is, got mugged by Tyson Gamble on tackle two. That was a key moment, and we discussed it a little bit in the other segment, Michael, but he really blew that try. Not only could he have gone left to find his winger to potentially score, but just take the tackle and move on. You're in great field position and you've got him on the ropes. Instead, he had a loose carry, and after that he carried on a bit, even though I can't really argue the fact that he gave Tyson Gamble a bit of a slap because he was carrying on really poorly, that kid. I mean, mind you, in that instance, he was the better player. Defensively, that was as bad as last year. They poured through making 70 metres a set, crashed through the middle to score. We had no line speed. We went backwards basically the whole second half. We had very little punch in the forwards. We have to address that in free agency, get an attitude adjustment. The entire fan base and the Fox commentary knew the ambush was on, but the club seemed ill-prepared. I think, Michael, that was my biggest disappointment, was that we knew that was coming. We knew that Ben Eichen went up there and they had 2 weeks off and they drew a line in the sand and they had some really good players coming back, including Katoni Staggs. We knew what they were going to do. You have to be up for that challenge. You got beaten by a pretty average team. Tim says, tough game to watch yesterday, but I can't say I'm surprised. I think Winds have glossed over a major issue with this team for some weeks now. I'm talking about our line speed and our defensive aggression in the middle of the field. The team stands so passively, allowing the opposition to make 10 metres most tackles, then force another few metres in post contact. Brisbane have clearly done their homework and hammered through the middle all afternoon. I don't expect the team to fire a shot in the finals. However, it would be nice to keep our final streak alive, considering we are in a transition phase and are building for a better year next year and beyond. Yeah, great points, Tim. I completely agree about the line speed and the lack of, I guess, defensive muscle in the middle. It's really noticeable. People were talking about it online during and after the game. They just kept making so many meters and we were making half in some instances. So Tim finishes saying, thanks for the pod. Keep up the good work. Screw those people complaining about the length of the pod. I personally love all the different chats and I think they are forgetting that it's your time. Thank you very much, Tim. That's very kind of you. And I'm glad you're enjoying the show. Thank you very much for the support. Beck has written to us. She said, simply, I was at the game on Sunday at Suncorp Stadium. Disappointing loss, but great to be there watching the guys run around live in the flesh. Okay, thank you very much. Caleb says, very differently, that was pathetic. We're the only team to lose to both the Bulldogs and Broncos this year, and when you account for some horrendous late-game collapses, Roosters and Knights, it makes this season all the more infuriating. We needed Sean to step up and guide the team home, and we went missing in the big moments again. I like Jesse, and he has all the physical tools you could ever want in a rugby league player, but he'd have to be one of the lowest footy IQs in the league to this point. If he'd just run left on that break from Katoa and passed, we were in. Woods and Hannay both said after the game that essentially the Broncos wanted it more, and we knew they'd be up for it. Sorry, that is unacceptable at a professional level not to be up for it as much as your opponent. Bring on Fitz and some accountability to the club. I'm sick of being Cronullified and taking games off against lower opponents. One bright side, for a guy who started with 10 minutes notice, I thought Trindle did as well as could be expected and even put on a couple of tries. Unfortunate for Moisa, but it'll be good to see Tricky get a chance in the first team to see what we have. Caleb, thanks so much for the mail. I completely agree, particularly with the bit about accountability and with the comments from Woods and Hannay saying we knew they'd be up for it. And I agree, it's not acceptable at this level. And when your season is almost on the line, you'd think, and you're playing a team you really should beat, you have to get the job done. It's no use us having this softer draw and then mucking it up like we did last year. It's just not good enough, as you say. Brett says, love the show, doing a great job. Long-time listener from Vietnam. How good's that? Thanks, Brett. At what stage do we give Braley a rest or send him back to Newtown to work on his game? He hasn't progressed in the last 18 months. His service is okay, but doesn't add enough variety or creativity to keep the defence guessing. I'd be prepared to give Trindle a go at 9 for a few weeks, or do we have other options? Now, you're not the first person here, Brett, to... Sorry, I should say, you're not the only person to raise how Braley is going this week. What I will say is I believe in the kid. I thought he was okay on the weekend. I didn't think he was overly negative in his play. I completely agree that he has to come out of his shell and he has to do it soon. He's got it in him. I know. I've seen it at lower grades. I've seen it at training. He's a very talented attacking footballer. Clinton and I discussed it a little bit before, and we're going to discuss it a bit later as well. But I don't know what to say about that, Brett, because I like the kid. I believe in the kid. I think that he's our best option at hooker. Maybe Clinton's on the money when he says that he's being driven into the ground a bit. But I also think it's up to Braley to come out of his shell a little bit in attack. Because when he does it, he looks pretty good. His kicking game is decent. So it's up to him to, I think, deliver on that. We actually don't have other options. Billy Magoulias can sort of play a little bit of dummy half. Kyle Patterson is a specialized hooker, but from what I've seen of him, I don't really think he's ready for first grade. If he did play, I don't know. I don't think he'd let you down, but I don't know how much he'd bring to the party as well. He's a tough little cookie. But next year, obviously, we'll have Cam McInnes in there at lock to back up Braley as well. So that might bring Braley's game out a little bit more. We'll see. Thanks so much, Brett. Take care over in Vietnam. Aaron says that was a hard one to take. I think I'm with the majority supporters, and I was all for SJ being re-signed, but I think a couple of our wins and definitely the game against Brisbane showed that he can't take control of a football side and be the dominant half. The forwards lack bite, but I think Teague had a real go. Connor wasn't great in the centres, but after the year he's had, he can have a subpar game. Final point, what do you think of Blake at the moment? He looks tired and flat. Is the 2 years of him being the only hooker catching up with him? Love the pod, up, up. Aaron, again, on what we said about Blake just before and in the first segment, I'm a little bit surprised at the amount of people who are bringing this to my and others' attention. I guess I might look at Blake through different coloured eyes, dare I say, but I'm definitely going to keep an eye on that because I am someone who believes in him as a player, and I think that he can be a great attacking player as well as a good defender. So I think it's a watch this space. And I think we might see in the next few weeks how he's travelling because we are playing, in theory, some lesser teams where he might be able to step up pretty easily and lay on some tries and that kind of thing. So let's see how he goes. I'm definitely going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think he's got it in him to be our long-term hooker. This is almost the letter of the week, and I don't want to single one out, to be honest, but I guess I kind of did. It's from Reese. And Reese says, just listening to last week's pod regarding Jardine's question around why Sean wasn't seen as enough of a team player. He certainly ticks all the boxes in terms of what's required of him, but I think the best way of explaining this is the way he's been on cloud nine since signing back with the Warriors. I don't believe he ever showed us the same love. It's a bit like dating someone on the rebound, but then they leave you to get back with their ex, and then you realize that's what they always wanted. We had a very fun time together with our Johnson, but you can tell by the way that his eyes sparkle when he talks about the Warriors that is who he truly loves and that's where he belongs. It's not us, it's him. Plenty of other sharks in the sea. That's pretty good. Pretty, pretty, pretty good. Thanks, Reese. Appreciate your support. Next question is based around Chad Townsend, who was going to be playing against us this week, but he's not because he's injured, but Nathan said, I'm surprised the Sharks didn't put a clause into Chad's release to the Warriors to prevent him from playing against us. Any impact that he has against us, positive, negative, could be one we could have avoided. What are your thoughts? I think the fact that we play them twice, Nathan, might have something to do with it. So that's two games out of, what would it be, 11 or so remaining in the season. I just think that potentially we weren't overly worried about it. I don't think we wanted to make a big deal out of the situation as well. Chad was playing second grade. His cards were stamped. I guess we kind of just wish him the best and move on. We don't want to hold him back. So that's my opinion. I mean, the Sharks board and admin might have a different story for you. But as far as I can tell, I don't think they were overly fussed about playing him. And that wasn't a disrespectful thing. I think it was just like a bring your best. Let's have some fun. Amy has written to us. She says, when do you think we'll be finding out about being back at Shark Park? And do you actually think it's going to happen next year? Thank you. Thank you for the mail, Amy. And I do think it's going to happen next year. and I think you'll be hearing more about it as the weeks and months fly by. I can tell you that the membership team and the staff surrounding some of the media, and I don't know what the actual offices are now called, there's so many different roles that so many people are doing, but all those people, those lovely people, are looking at making it work for next year. I don't think you'll get 12 home games. I think you'll probably get 8 or so. That's just what I've heard. That changes all the time. So you'll be hearing about it soon. And I really believe in my heart of hearts it'll happen next year, barring any disastrous situation. And I can't wait. And I think that it'll be a lot of fun. Ryan says, disappointing loss, although some outstanding performances individually by Kennedy and Ronaldo. Wilton, Katoa, Tracy were all good too. He says, Hane must address the centres rushing in on the goal line defence. It isn't working. Yeah, I think they need to stiffen up that defence, quite obviously. That's a very obvious statement of me to make. But the rushing in thing, it works sometimes, but you really have to do it well. I think Connor Tracy, playing his first game starting in the centres, I want to say, I hope that's right. I thought that every now and then he got it right, and the rest of the time he got it wrong. But he's so quick that he can actually slow down that play. Whereas if you see Will Chambers do it, these days obviously he's not the quickest man alive, and it's more of a struggle for someone like that. So they definitely need to know when to go and when to stay. But I think in general that defensive line, in the complete line, not just the edges, they need a really big lesson in how to defend, to be honest. And I think that Fitzgibbon's going to come in November and he's going to take it back to basics. I feel like they'll honestly be going back to basics and learning how to defend again. And I got no problem with that. I think it'll be good for the long run. Ryan also says, I feel a lot better having seen Trindle get a run in the halves. Is that if that's the direction we're going to go next year? I believe he's now the better option long-term to partner Hines. Molan is the best option this year, but based on age and injury, I'm glad we have Trindle locked up for next. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it, my friend. Jason has written a really, really important note to us, and I'm not going to get to it this week, but I'm going to try to think about this during the week. And whoever is on the show with me next week, I'll try and get them to think about it too. But he wants to know, what is my top 5 breakup songs? And I think that's a great question. Jason says, his are She Hates Me by Puddle of Mud and Please Don't Go by KC and the Sunshine Band. I don't know the Puddle of Mud song. I'll have to look that up, Jason. I'm going to try my best to think of my top 5 breakup songs. I like that challenge, so thanks a lot. Hope you're well. Now, following up on a letter from Dave last week, and just to reiterate, he said he wants Sharkcast Pod to campaign week in, week out for the new Leagues Club being built, so the one coming in 2023, to have a museum-type area that we can all go and reminisce in and learn from, and a museum-type situation, which the Dragons have just started up at their Leagues Club. And he also is campaigning for Ash, who is all things Cronulla Sharks on Instagram, the king of memorabilia, to be involved. Now, I can tell you, Dave, that things have progressed a little bit, because people at the club heard your letter being written out last week. And they were already working on some ideas for, I believe, for the new club. I don't think it'll be for Carrillo. I think for the new club in 2023. And there's one or two people starting to very initially get the ball rolling with an idea about how to do such a thing. So, Dave, you've done really well with this campaign so far, and we'll keep it going. And hopefully by the time the new club arrives, we can have a very special dedicated area where we can soak in all the Sharks memorabilia and history. I can already see it now. I can smell it. Josh has written and said, I finished the Fantasy Draft podcast and really enjoyed it. As a Brisbane-based Sharks fan, I don't get to Shark Park as much as I'd like to. But that two-try night effort from Fifita against the West Tigers in 2013 is probably my most memorable game there. I'll never forget the runaway try he scored, followed by the lawnmower post-try celebration. Was happy that got a mention on the pod. Brought back plenty of good memories. Yeah, I was there too, Josh, and I will never forget that try in particular. And it's a great reminder that Andrew Fifita was one of the best props in the game and a real breath of fresh air, and obviously someone that changed our lives forever, which we should always be thankful for. Thank you, Josh, for being in touch. So I think I've gotten to most of the letters, if not all. Obviously the aim is all, and I put them all together, I collate them all, and hopefully I haven't missed any is what I'm trying to say. I've got one last one here from Terry. He said, thanks for putting out the podcast for us each week. It's quickly become a favorite pastime of mine. Thanks so much, Terry. That's really, really awesome of you to say that. He says, loved hearing the old commentary at the end of the fantasy draft. It brought back so many great memories. Some thoughts to discuss. I think Fitz has a long-term plan for the club as evidenced by his focus on youth and development. We'll no doubt miss the likes of Johnson and Woods next year, but they weren't going to win us a premiership. All the best, Terry. Thanks again, Terry, for your kind words. I'm glad that the podcast was enjoyable for you, the Fantasy Draft podcast. If you haven't heard it, it'll be there forever. Go back and check it out when you like. It's obviously a podcast which probably could be listened to at any point in the year or whenever, because it's very much about one thing only, and that's picking our best Sharks team. It's not about current news or anything else. So if you get to that at some point, I hope you enjoy it. On what you said, Terry, I also believe that Fitzgibbon has a long-term plan for the club. He has said a few times now that he's impressed with the youth and development of the junior system. And I agree with you about Johnson and Aaron Woods. I think that at times they've served their purpose, probably more Johnson than Woods, although Woods has been serviceable this year for sure. But I do think that moving on and getting some new blood in will be a positive thing. And I think it all comes from Fitzgibbon. I think he sees this. So if we're wrong, it's going to be some lean years. But I don't think we're wrong. And when I say we, I mean all of us listening and people involved in the game. I think that we're onto a really good coach. And I think he's a very sensible and thoughtful rugby league coach. And you've seen and heard some of them, how they act and how they speak. And I think this guy's special. And I think that the board and the club should be congratulated for taking a punt on him. I'm looking forward to the Fitzgibbon era. I really am. In fact, I can't wait for November. I look forward to each week in between, but I can't wait. I believe that's all the letters. Thanks so much to everyone for being in touch. Really appreciate it. Keep them coming. We absolutely love hearing from you. So sharkcastpod@gmail.com and at sharkcastpod on the DMs will find us. Back after the break to do a preview on the Warriors game. This is Sharkcastpod. Sharkcast is supported by the best and most honest real estate agent in the Sutherland Shire, Jason Hawes from Cripps & Cripps Real Estate. He's an expert in the Caringbah region and has his eye all across the Shire. Lifelong Sharks fan and supporter of this podcast, if you're looking to buy or sell in the region, the person you need to be talking to is Jason Hawes from Cripps & Cripps Real Estate. Call him on 0410 417 450. That's 0410 417 450. Jason Hawes, Cripps & Cripps Real Estate.
Orbison, the first man play. The ball goes to ground. It was a terrible pass. Ferguson couldn't pick it up. And now Fecky's away. He skipped away from Kenny Dowell. And the Sharks run to victory number 14 in a row.
Welcome back to the show, Sharkcast Pod, brought to you by Dyson Logistics, the Royal Motor Yacht Club, and Jason Hawes at Cripps & Cripps Real Estate. Sharks v Warriors this Sunday, 4 o'clock. We think it's going to be at Kogra. You never know what's going to happen in these COVID times. Sharks team, Will Kennedy at fullback, Sione Katoa and Ranolo Mulitalo are your wingers. Returning in the centres is Will Chambers and Jesse Ramian. Connor Tracy will play number 6, named to start in the number 6 with Sean Johnson in the halves. Your forward pack. Aiden Tolman, Blake Brayley, Aaron Woods, Britton Nakora, Teague Wilton starts, and Toby Rudolph locks the scrum. Braden Trindle, Sifa Talakai, Jack Williams, and Hamlin Ueli are your immediate bench. Billy Magulius, Mawini Hirodi, Andrew Fifita, and Luke Metcalf in 21. Luke Metcalf in 21 is your extended bench. So Matt Moylan is still injured. Tracy goes to 6. Chambers comes back into the centres. Trindle goes back to the bench. The Warriors team is pretty decent. Reece Walsh returns at fullback. Chad Townsend is not playing. Sean O'Sullivan will play half. They've got a very handy player in RTS on the wing. Matt Lodge will debut alongside Big Bopper Fenua Blake, the very talented Jazz Tavaga at lock. And it's a pretty big bench of Kane Evans, Leeson Almau, Bunty Afoa, and Ben Murdoch-Masilla. That's a very big bench. So, again, our middles may be tested there. Head-to-head, the Sharks have won 25, Warriors have won 17. We've won the past 3 and 7 of the past 8. We last met in round 18 last year, Ronaldo Militalo scoring a double in the 22-14 win at Kogra. Speaking of Kogra, prior to 2020, Cronulla had won just 12 of 36 matches. Since using the ground as their own, we've won 8 of 14, including 4 of the past 6 this season. We're aiming for 3 straight wins at the venue for the 3rd time in club history. This may surprise you, but Cronulla is making the 2nd fewest errors and has the equal fewest incomplete sets inside our own half. We're also conceding the fewest ruck infringements. So some of our discipline isn't too bad. We're also forcing the 2nd most dropouts in the NRL. Only Penrith are forcing more. So as mentioned, I think in the Clinton segment before, Sean Johnson was getting some repeat sets. Will Kennedy was. I think Trindle might have as well. Need to keep that up. I think it's a really important part of the game plan. Some of Sean's game management, not so bad there. Just got to do it for the 80 minutes. The Warriors have lost 4 matches in a row. Last week they lost in Golden Point to the Dragons, the Dirty Dragons. They've won just 1 of their past 7 games. 10 of the 15 Warriors games this year have been decided by 6 points or less. Only 1 of their 5 wins have come against a current top 8 team. The Sharks have scored almost 40% of their tries down the left touch channel. It's the highest percentage in the NRL for that position of the field. So very good on the left-hand side. Defensively, it's the opposite, with our left touch conceding 21 tries, the 2nd highest total and highest percentage for that position of the field. Now, if we go to the Warriors, in defence, they've conceded 21 of 67 tries down the right touch side, which is the 2nd most in the NRL. So we should be attacking that side of the field specifically. Sean Johnson faces his former and future club in the Warriors this week. He made his NRL debut with them, playing 162 matches from 2011 to 2018. He is their all-time leading point scorer and goal kicker. He has signed a 2-year deal for the Warriors from 2022. He joined Cronulla in 2019 and has played 41 matches for us so far. This will be his 5th match against the Warriors. He's won the past 3, and he scored his only try against them in round 10 last year. How do we think Sean's going to go? We've discussed his attitude on Sunday. He's playing his former and future club this week. Is that going to have any impact on his game or not? What do you think? I sure hope it doesn't. I mean, I hope that he's out to be motivated and try and impress them, but I hope he has a really good game. Look out for Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, who I'm a huge fan of. He has the 2nd most runs and run meters in the NRL behind only Brian To'o. So, always dangerous. RTS, always. Warriors are a tough team. I say that because they haven't been home for a long time. We've got morons organising barbecues down the coast because they want a game and they want to have a good time. Well, you got the Warriors who haven't been home to see their friends and family in a long time. The Warriors are a tough team. I feel like they're going to give it a good shake on Sunday. It could be close. I hope it's not. I hope it's a blowout to the Sharks. But I look at our defense, which had been okay for the 4 weeks prior to last week against the Broncos. I'm a little worried about the size of some of the Warriors forwards. And I think Reece Walsh can do some damage from the back. So our kicking game has to be good. Our kick chase has to be even better. And I really want to see specifically our spine stand up. Will Kennedy was great last week. I want to see Connor Tracy have a great game at 5'8". Sean needs to lift a little bit. And Blake, is, as we've spoken about, needs to come out of his shell. And I think if that happens, I think it'll go a long way to us winning. I think we will win. I think we have to win. I think there was a reality check on Sunday against the Broncos and a bit of a, I hope it's a bit of a wake-up call for both the coaching staff and the players, because it just wasn't good enough. Stay tuned to your government agencies and social media outlets as to what's happening with the game on Sunday, whether you can go or not go, or if some of us can go and some of us can't go. We'll have to stay tuned on that kind of thing. But above all, thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate it. And I hope you're doing well, both mentally and physically. These are hard times, so take care. And if you do need help, definitely go seek it from whoever you can seek it from, or just reach out to people, because, as I said, these are tough times we're living in. Sometimes we all need a bit of a hand. So if that's you, absolutely reach out to someone. Otherwise, I genuinely hope you're all doing well, and I look forward to podcasting with a regular guest host next week and discussing a win against the Warriors and us staying in the top eight. That's what I hope. Until then, up, up, Cronulla. Sharkies! Sharkies!
Shire, turn your porch lights off, because we're coming home with a trophy.